And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, this weekend was the anniversary of the ending of the war in Europe, World War II. Of course, the war in Europe never really ended. We had the war in Yugoslavia a generation later. But as far as World War II is concerned, May 8th was when the Nazis were defeated by the combined forces of the Soviet Army, the American Army, and the British Army, as well as the partisans and the resistance behind the lines.
Right.
And people thought that put an end to fascism. End of fascism. Done. Finish with it. Wipe your hands with it. The Jewish partisans' watchword was never to forget, never to forgive. Here we are, 76 years later. The Republican Party's response to the Biden election is to reorganize as a fascist party. They don't use that word, but that's what their program is. It is the modern equivalent of how the Nazis organized. Jingoism, racism, fooling working people to support big corporate demands, and
fear-mongering,
hatred, and murder. That's what it was. And that's the Republican response. That's the Trump program. And it seems to me we have to just confront that. We have to face that. We have to realize what we're dealing with, especially this May 8th, this anniversary of the defeat of the first fascists. And probably the most glaring example of this last week was the hullabaloo about Liz Cheney, one of the most right-wing members of Congress, a woman who defended torture by the American government, considered to be a traitor by these Trump fascists. And they're going to get rid of her, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to unpack there. Interestingly, the Republican Party, which had been in decline from the Great Depression through World War II and failed to unseat Harry Truman in 1948, chose as its first successful candidate post-war the general who defeated the Nazis, Dwight Eisenhower. And, you had these... their next standard bearer was Richard Nixon. Now what you have is these folks who really are so much smaller than those people. And Nixon was into real politique, from Henry Kissinger. He had a different challenge, the challenge of communism. Of course, he went to China, but the idea of the fascism that you're talking about, with the Republican Party now, it's kind of amazing. They've turned their back on truth and on reality, and you mentioned Liz Cheney. Liz Cheney voted more with Donald Trump than the woman who's about to dispossess her. She was far more conservative than, or at least she was more conservative than Elise Stefanik, the New Yorker, who has changed her political stripes. And that's something else, in that these folks have changed their entire way of thinking and the way of being. You go up and down the Republican Party, and you see what they thought of Donald Trump early on. You look at Ted Cruz's statements. You look at Lindsey Graham's statements. You look at so many in the Republican Party, what they said about him. And the fact is that now, even after defeat, don't forget, Donald Trump twice lost the popular vote. He lost the last time by more than anybody else in history. He lost the House of Representatives for them. And because of his antics, he lost the Senate for them. And when he went into, it's not really retirement, but he went down to Mar-a-Lago, you would have thought that the Republicans would have said good riddance. Leave him there. But they keep flocking there. And there's something else that's happening, obviously. I've often referred to Hannah Arendt and her thoughts about these things. But the cult of personality, even in defeat, you know, the cult of personality with Hitler was he was winning. You know, he was successful in for a long time before the tide turned, before he made the disastrous mistake of turning on the Soviet Union. Mussolini was a cult of personality there. And now you have this cult of personality for a guy who's essentially been a loser. But they don't care about that. It's hard to believe. Don't forget.
Fascism requires a cult of personality because the program doesn't really make sense. It doesn't hang together. It can only hang together behind the cult of personality. The great leader is the point of fascism. You support the great leader, the father figure, the guy who's going to solve. Only I can solve these problems. Remember, Trump said that. Right. Only I can solve these problems. That's the ultimate political statement of fascism, because the programs, if they're examined for what they are, would repel the average working person whom the fascists need to support them.
Yeah. I'm reading a book now called How Fascism Works. And that's exactly what he starts talking about. I haven't finished it yet, but he talks about the father figure in politics, a guy named Jason Stanley. And this isn't really anything new. One of the Democratic communication strategists back during the John Kerry running for president days talked about how the Republicans always presented a father figure and that they were drawn to strength. I'm not sure that it was George Lakoff or the other fellow whose name escapes me for the time being, but they talk about that and wanting strength as their and just the appearance of strength. It doesn't necessarily have to be real strength. It's just the appearance of strength on there. And that's what we have right now. After January 6th, where you would think that when their lives were actually in danger, that some of them would decide that, you know, we've had enough of this. Kevin McCarthy made a speech. Mitch McConnell made a speech. And that attitude lasted about 3 days. I mentioned Ted Cruz. We know that Trump insulted his wife. He insulted or he insinuated his father was a murderer in on the Kennedy assassination. And Ted Cruz is still, you know, playing up to Trump. There's no shame and no guts for these people.
I think that Lindsey Graham made the point on Fox News the other night. He said that the difference between him and Liz Cheney is that she's concluded that the Republicans can't grow, can't win, can't really exist if Trump is the leader. And he has concluded that the Republicans can't win without Trump being their leader. So if that's what you conclude, you'll eat any pile of garbage. You'll swallow any indignity. You'll repent of any of your previous statements because you're convinced that otherwise you're going to lose your job.
Yeah. You know, we've talked about the Republican Party for a long time has been the party of no. They've been against virtually everything, but they at least back in the Reagan and early Gingrich days, they had some ideas that they wanted to get through. They have no plan or no ideas except for tax cuts for the wealthy at this point. You know, it goes back to last summer when they had a party platform that had no planks in it. It was
They said they weren't going to issue a platform. Right. There was no need to. They would do whatever Trump wanted them to do.
Right. At any given time.
At any given time. And since at any given time he has no ideas whatsoever, at any given time they have no thing to do except tax cuts. Or subsidies. He would accept subsidies. I mean, these are very corrupt people, don't forget.
True. you know, the corruption keeps keeps surfacing here. Yeah. You know, you mentioned about Trump and Fox or whatever. There was an interesting development this week. One of the insurrectionists, being arraigned or being asked to be let out of jail temporarily pending his charges. His lawyer came out and said that he had lost his job during the shutdown and started watching television and had Fox on all day long. And that as a result, he was suffering from Foxitis or Fox mania. I guess that's a new name in the book of diseases.
That goes hand in hand with Sidney Powell's defense in the trial for her disbarment and sanctions against her, in which she says no reasonable person would ever believe her. So what did she do wrong?
Well, Fox came up that defense when they were sued for defamation, that no reasonable person could believe that Tucker Carlson was giving them facts, that it was merely opinion. And I guess more of that's going to come out with the Dominion and the Smartmatic lawsuits against those folks. But millions of people believe it. They still believe it. The big lie, so to speak, is alive and well and unyielding. And
that's true. Millions of people do believe it. But let's look at the ratios and proportions. 70% of the Republican voters believe the big lie. That Trump somehow won the election. They believe that. But that group amounts to only 30% of the total electorate. 70% repudiate that. Now, 70-30 split, you'd have to say, you wouldn't think that the 30% should carry such weight as if they were 52%, 51%, or even 50%. It's a third. Third is a lot, but a third is a small number. 70% is a lot more.
Well, but what you have to understand is there's an intensity factor. When you have the cult of personality, these folks are far more intense in preserving the lie than the folks who oppose the lie and who are defending the truth.
That's true. So but if 70% believe the truth, then it's incumbent upon the political leaders who base themselves on the truth to figure out how to mobilize that 70%. It's not a good excuse to say, well, the 30% are more passionate. Make the 70% passionate. After all, it's their lives that is being endangered.
Yeah. But in some respects, the ones that are doing it are not the Democrats. They're the former Republicans, the Lincoln Project people.
Well, but isn't that a condemnation of the Democrats?
Of course it is.
Yeah.
Of course it is. But part of it is because of the nature of the Democratic Party and how they appeal to their own base. Their base, to use it, this might be controversial, but is more feminine in its approach. They have more women in their base who don't like conflict as much. And so they have to package themselves somewhat differently. To appeal to that. And then you have the folks in the middle, the ones that have left the Republican Party, and they have to be careful not to offend them or drive them away. So they have to pull their punches a little bit more. But yeah, they could be more intense. I think they could be sharper in what they're doing. we've seen that for years, though. The Democrats just don't know how to really form great messaging in what
I'm
they're
not
doing.
Sure you're right about pulling punches. Look, down in Florida, for the last decade, there's been a group called the Florida Alliance, which is a group of liberal fundraisers, liberal donors, and organizations that have been pressuring the Democratic Party to pay attention to organizing in the rural areas, in the small towns and cities, and not to give up on organizing in between the big election cycles, but to continue to do it. And for 30 years, they've been pointing out that the Democratic Party in Florida has been underinvesting in down-party elections. And I dare say, and you'll know this, if you looked at the Democratic Party operations in any state, you'll discover exactly that is what's going on in every state. It's certainly true here in Pennsylvania. So yes. I think it's the failure of the Democrats to stick up for themselves. And also because they adopted programs that didn't appeal to working people. So I suppose it didn't matter whether or not they organized, because they weren't going to organize behind the right things. But if you don't campaign, if you don't organize, if you don't fight for power, you don't get it. You lose it.
Well, that's true. So in some places, it's just the case, and it happened when the redistricting or reapportionment of the state legislature was happening back after the 2010 election in Pennsylvania, that the leadership was more concerned about protecting its own than expanding its base there, and it had dire consequences. The Republicans, really figured this out. The Democrats had people like Howard Dean, who had figured it out, saying, we're going to fight in all 50 states, and it was very successful for two cycles, and then they got away from it. Stacey Abrams has figured this out down in Georgia, which is why she has a big target on her back everywhere that she's going, because the Republicans know that she's gotten to the grassroots and what you have to do in terms of organizing. But part of it also is the money situation, where the Republicans or the Republican backers have decided to put their money, and they put their money into these organizations that do just that, that work on these things. And the Democrats don't seem to have people who do that. That's an important factor as well. Mike Bloomberg was going to put money into the Florida organization type of thing and messaging, and it didn't work out very well in the last election either. They have to have people who have that vision.
I know about Mike Bloomberg, but I live in a small county, and it's a rural county, and it's it could be the poster child for what we're talking about. This is a county that voted 2/3 for Trump, right? So I organized the campaign, not in the presidential election, but in the local election, in the election for the government of the county, the commissioners. Right. And in the primary, now the primary is the bedrock politically involved people, right? This is not the people who you sort of bring in and convince them to pay attention for the next 5 minutes. These are people who care about it. In the primary, our campaign got nearly 40% of the Republican primary vote. And we didn't have a Republican, this was hardly a Trump campaign. This was a bread and butter local issues campaign that any Sanders candidate would have stood in support of, or any Sanders voter would have supported, as well as every other voter might have supported. And we captured the Democratic majority, and we got 40% of the Republican vote. You do that across the counties, across all the Republican counties in Pennsylvania, you'll capture the state legislature.
Yeah. Well, I think in places like your county that's been Republican so long that they've gotten complacent in what they're doing. They didn't see you coming.
No.
And I don't think they know how to react to it at this point. They're still locked into their old boy type of politics and strategy. So you did have an advantage there. But I think if you had better, I don't mean better, but perhaps more funding and things, you could have even done better.
We might have done better. All of our funding was local. We didn't get it hardly a nickel. We got a few dollars from Lackawanna County. But basically, whatever we raised was raised locally. Not that we didn't want to get money from the great centers of Democratic donors, but they wouldn't give it to us. Just like Stacey Abrams couldn't get it for years and years and years and years. Now she gets it. But she got it after she won. When she needed it to win, she didn't get it.
Yeah, so. that's the conundrum. You need the money to win, but until you show you can win, you can't get the money.
Yeah. And look about the... You got an election in Lackawanna County right now, Chermak and Flynn.
Right.
How's the money situation there?
Yeah. Well, first of all, let me remind our listeners that in Pennsylvania right now, there is no state senator who's a Democrat who comes from a place north of Interstate 80. The one seat that was there is Lackawanna County, and that's vacant right now, and the Republicans are aiming to capture it. And they're putting huge amounts of money in.
By the way, north of, if you're not in Pennsylvania, if you don't know the map, that's like half the state.
Yeah. Yeah, geographically, that's the top half the top half of the state. And it's got some Democratic places, Scranton, Wilkes-Barre, Erie, those places, those working class cities.
You've got college areas like State College, where the University of Penn State is.
Yeah, and that's the fight. And the figures that have come out show that there's all these out-of-county groups backed by Republicans have put in large amounts of money. They're testing this. This is a chance to grab a traditional Democratic seat. They're testing it. They're testing their messaging. They're going after the governor on this and the programs that are the way he handled the COVID response. The Democrats are, I don't see the intensity there. They seem to be relying on their huge registration advantage. We'll see what happens.
But that advantage basically is centered in Philadelphia.
Well, Lackawanna County is still heavily Democratic.
It may be, but there's not that many people.
Well, but for the state Senate race, it doesn't matter. You know, it's a local race.
Yes, I understand that. I got that. But the point is that you've got to go into the counties where the Republicans have an advantage, and you've got to split them apart.
Sure.
You've got to go after those people who go to the Republican Party for reasons that ought not to accept. Reasons that should make them oppose the Republican Party. And that's not one election cycle. That's many election cycles to convince people about that.
Yeah. And we're going to see what happens. One thing that I know Marty Flynn is counting on is the fact that there's a Democratic primary for mayor. And he's hoping that a lot of Democrats come out for that. He just better hope that they also check his race as well. We'll have to see.
Who is running in the Democratic primary for mayor, aside from the mayor?
Well, the mayor, Paige Cognetti, who's, I think, pretty popular and done a pretty good job. The other one is the city tax collector who's given up his position, a fellow named John Murray. And interestingly enough, he's running as the party insider. He's running as, I've always been a Democrat. Paige Cognetti ran as an independent when she won. And he's got a sign that says Lackawanna, area native. Paige Cognetti is from Oregon originally. She married a local businessman, Ryan Cognetti, who has a place in Clark Summit. And she got involved in politics. She's got a degree from Harvard, and she was on the school board for a while. So we'll see if the nativism, so to speak, takes hold in that race. I want to talk about another factor that we haven't talked about when we talk about Trump and the Republicans, is that Trump has been shut down. He's been shut out of Twitter. And this week, Twitter came out and said...
And Facebook.
I'm sorry, Facebook. Facebook came out this week and said that we're going to keep him off for the next 6 months because of what he did and his lies and his incitements. But they've also said they have this group they call their Supreme Court that Facebook has to have a better policy in the next 6 months. And I can see that Trump is going to put tremendous amount of pressure on Facebook to let him back on. And we'll see. He's been trying. He's had surrogates putting out his messages there, and they've cut them off as well. He's tried to use different kinds of descriptions. Instead of Donald Trump, he uses other things, former president and this or that. And Facebook's been shutting him down. And it's been fairly powerful. And I think that, you know, I think that's helped Joe Biden, who's been able to dominate the news cycle rather than Donald Trump.
Well, people who complain about the Facebook owners and the Google owners and the Twitter right. owners and what have you, as if this were a new phenomenon in American history, are forgetting that before there was the internet, there were newspapers, and the newspaper owners printed what they wanted to print. And basically, they printed stuff that was favorable to big business. That's what they printed. If you were a labor union, you didn't get a fair break in the local coverage, in the newspaper coverage. If you were a radical party of the left, you didn't get covered at all in the local papers. The great columnist, New Yorker columnist, A.J. Liebling, who did a weekly column about the press and about press freedom, famously said in the late 1940s, freedom of the press is only for those who own the press.
Well, this goes back to Thomas Jefferson, who used the press to his political advantage. And then, of course, in the latter part of the 19th century, you had the Pulitzers and the Hearst newspapers. For gosh sakes, the Hearst papers practically started the Spanish-American War with their coverage. And you had these papers after the Civil War that actually had party names in it. St. Louis Globe Democrat, the Union Tribune in San Diego, or the San Diego Union at one point. Then they merged with the Union Tribune. So you knew the Scranton Tribune used to be the Scranton Republican.
Right.
So they, you know, we had this partisanship, and it generally was anti-worker because the owners wanted to keep wages low.
Yeah, and unionization was the issue of the day.
Yes.
That was the issue, just as immigration is the issue of the day today. Anyway, what's coming up next week? Because we're almost at the end of our time for this week.
Well,
more of the same, I guess.
More of the same. We'll still have the repercussions from the jobs report. They're going to try and cut benefits for people, blaming that for not creating enough jobs. I think that report was an anomaly, but we'll have to see.
Well, this would be good to review. And the Republican response to this is not raise wages, but force people to work. Slavery. Threaten people with starvation. They'll go to work. How about pay them an adequate wage? Give them proper conditions on the job and off the job. Provide child care, and people will be able to go to work. Nobody wants to not work. Work is a way to express your creativity.
But people have found that also staying home and being with their families has an intrinsic value. So you need to raise the wages to get away from that value.
Yeah. Well, we'll do this next week. This is for next week. This is not for this week.
It's for this week,
but we have no time this week.
Right. Happy Mother's Day.
Happy Mother's Day. See you next week.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place. This program is supported by Argosy Bookshop of New York City. 116 East 59th Street, just down the block from Bloomingdale's. Old and rare books, prints and maps, members of the International League of Antiquarian Booksellers, founding members of the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America, members of the Appraisers Association of America, on the web at Argosy Books, ArgosyBooks.com. Check them out for books, autographs, maps, and prints.